Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, the podcast for serious lacrosse players and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their lacrosse careers. And now, here are your hosts, New England Lacrosse Journal's Kyle Devitt and Jack Piatelli.
Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me, Mr. Jack Piatelli. How are we doing, Jack?
Great to be in studio, Kyle, and great to see your handsome face. The summer is going along very quickly, but I'm very happy to be here.
I feel very disarmed, and I know that it's just because we have two Piatellis on the podcast today, guys. I don't know. It was eventually going to happen, but, you know, Jack was going to bring... We already had his sons on, and now we have his nephew. But the good news is his nephew is an excellent assistant coach at RPI. Chris Piatelli, how we doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Now, remember what we talked about before we started recording? No ganging up on me too bad, right?
Yeah, I can't make any promises. We'll see.
I knew it.
So, Chris, tell us, what was the largest differential in score win last year? What team was it against? Differential in score, for and against.
It was Clark. We played Clark 20-4 in Worcester in early in the season. So they were just getting their legs underneath of them.
Did they have any sticks in their hands?
Oh my God!
Yes, they did. It was one of our better games, and you know they obviously had they figured it out as the season went on.
Great. I'm glad we got that out of the way early, Coach. I think RPI is a very unique school. I actually know your head coach, Scott Hackett Daglish. We did camps back in Brown way back in the day when he was an assistant there. How would you describe RPI to a potential recruit?
Yeah, that's a great question. Obviously, we're well known for engineers, but we also, about 35% of our team is actually business major. So a lot of our guys are interested in business. We also have guys that work, or that majors are computer science and physics, chemistry, mathematics. So it's not all engineering. You know, we have a D1 hockey program on campus, which is fantastic as well. So our facilities are D1. We get our locker room year round, which is also kind of unique to Division III. When I played at Hamilton, we shared our locker room with the football team, and then we couldn't get into it until the swimming team was finished in the winter. That has changed, obviously, but you know that's kind of unique. So, you know, for us, we really just try to sell the school, and we just, you know, try to talk about the different majors that we have.
And you started your longest tenured job is you coached at Central Catholic in Lawrence, Mass, from 2013 to 21 until this past season. What can you tell me about how that experience kind of bled into being a college coach?
Yeah, I mean, I was fortunate enough to kind of build some great relationships with these college coaches, you know, like Coach Daggs. He recruited a few of my guys, and then we, you know, just kind of cultivated that relationship. And, you know, I think it's unique that he and I have, you know, he spent his entire career in college, and I've spent some time, you know, at the college level, club level, and in high school level. So for me, I've been kind of building on my past experience as a head coach and being able to bring that, you know, similar type to the sideline, while still learning the college game. You know, the biggest difference for me is just doing so much more film breakdown, which is kind of the biggest difference to me from what I've seen between high school and college.
So you're in charge of breaking down all the film from your games and opponents' games?
We use Huddle Assist, but Coach Daggs and I kind of split the duties, and you know, we work together to break down the opposing team's film, you know, when we're scouting. You know, we put together playlists for the guys, and then we'll do some one-on-one sessions with the players, and then we'll also just do some team sessions as well. But there's just more of it to be had, and the quality is usually better as well. So,
how important is it for your players to watch the film today? Because everybody watches film, and there wasn't film when I played, and probably not as much film when you played at Hamilton. But do you get as much out of film, watching film, as you think you do?
For us, I think the biggest teaching moments are during the film sessions. You know, we have the ability to kind of build a different type of relationship where we do those one-on-one sessions, like I said. On the field during practice, we're trying to do as little teaching as possible and let the boys play. You know, a lot of the teaching comes in the classroom and in the office with us. You know, it's for me, it's about teaching the guys how to watch film. At RPI, the guys have a lot of lacrosse IQ coming in, but they also push each other to, you know, they're watching film together, and they're kind of getting together as an offense and a defense. You know, the older guys are helping the freshmen integrate right into our system by watching film, watching practice. In the fall especially, they're watching a lot more practice. We actually use this system called GameStrat, where we have an iPad on the sideline and our guys are able to see replay instantly, basically. It's maybe a 5-second delay where they can watch the previous play. So it's really a helpful tool where we're, you know, where I think film has done a great job and expanded the lacrosse IQ of our players.
Just looking through your schedule and not talking about that other game we talked about earlier, you play a lot of NUMAC teams, you play a lot of New England teams. How do you make the schedule? I know we ask this of a lot of college coaches, but what's your role in trying to round out your schedule? And I mean, you've got NESCAC teams on here as well. How does that come together for you?
Yeah. So I don't specifically do the scheduling for RPI, but I know that Coach Daggs tries to schedule as many competitive games as possible. Obviously the NESCAC speaks for itself. The NUMAC is fantastic as well. So, you know, we try to balance a schedule while getting those regional opponents that are going to be ranked at the end of the season. You know, you want to be able to set yourself up for postseason success. And also our league is a gauntlet. I mean, we want to kind of be ramping up and playing our best lacrosse when conference play starts in April and May. And then obviously we really want to be playing in May like we did this past year. And, you know, I think we can continue to build on that by keeping the schedule competitive.
Talking about that, it's the Liberty League, which actually really is a murderer's row Division III, especially since RIT joined, I believe, three seasons ago from Empire VIII. And obviously now the two-time D3 national champs. How – I know you're the offensive coordinator, but how do you scout – RIT? Like, yeah, what is that? What's step one and what's step 25?
Yeah. I mean, it's a great point. You know, they just have a lot of depth. They have, you know, they can score in many different ways, and it's not about attacking per se, you know, one aspect of their game. You know, for us, we really try to focus on trying to stop their 6v6 and not get into a track meet with them just because they like to push the pace of play. Obviously we like to push the pace of play too, but we're not on that level at this point. You know, we're definitely working to that point. That's our recruiting goals. You know, we were fortunate enough that we were able to, you know, slow them down a little bit and, you know, the only team to beat them in 5 seasons. And I think the first team in 7 years in conference play or something like that. So, you know, I think we kind of woke them up a little bit. They had their revenge in the postseason in our Liberty League playoffs. But, you know, for us, we just wanted to focus on, you know, I think not necessarily getting ahead of ourselves. And you know, RIT gets a lot of publicity, and we didn't want our guys to kind of focus on the big names, quote unquote, and just treat them as another team. You know, and I think that was the key to our success this season.
Chris, talk a little bit about when you got started playing lacrosse and where you got started playing lacrosse.
Yep. Yeah. So, you know, Jack is a huge reason why I started playing lacrosse, honestly. I can remember having a lacrosse stick in my hand as as young as, I mean, as far back as I can remember, honestly. Jack, you know, was a rep for Brian and kept giving me sticks and lacrosse stuff. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to go to Young Guns lacrosse camp, where a lot of lacrosse legends, a lot of lacrosse coach legends started, where I met a lot of those guys anyway. And when I grew up in Byfield, Mass, we didn't have youth lacrosse. You know, that was my exposure, was watching Jack play in the Blazers and then play at Young Guns. And then I was fortunate, we moved to Albany when I was 12, and I started playing for the Albany Capitals and played with Mikey Lavelle and a lot of guys like that that are kind of legends in upstate New York. And then I played at Albany Academy, and then I was fortunate enough to go to Hamilton College and play hockey and lacrosse for a couple of years, and played 4 years of lacrosse. And then I went to Australia and played at Glenelg, where Jack got me and introduced to some guys over there as well. So I had a blast down there. And ever since then, I've kind of just worked my way up through the ranks, so to speak. You know, I coached at Nobles with Mikey Herring. And then I coached at Dexter, Derby, Brookline, yeah, and then obviously Central Catholic and now RPI. So I've had a lot of experience and a lot of fortune. You know, my last name definitely opens up a lot with Uncle Jack here. So I've tried to kind of pave my own way, but you know, it certainly helps that I share a last name with the Hall of Famer over here.
The legend always helps. I actually call him the captain. I don't know if he knows that. Yeah. I call him the captain.
I will say my nephew has been through some difficult times in his life. He lost his dad at a young age, and he is an excellent coach. He knows the game extremely well. He's passionate. He's very good with his players, cares about his players, really understands the X's and O's, and he'll be a very good college head coach someday in the near future.
I appreciate you saying that. Thank you.
You mentioned that you played hockey, and I'm assuming you played with the Lavelles hockey as well, because they're big hockey guys. And I think the connection between hockey and lacrosse is always fascinating to me, because I never had it. We didn't have it where I grew up. What led you to coach lacrosse instead of coaching hockey, or do you also coach hockey?
Yeah, great. I mean, that's a great question. So hockey was always my first love. My dad was my hockey coach. I could skate as soon as I could walk, basically. I went to all of his practices. You know, he coached at Governor Dummer Academy, which is now Governor's Academy. And so I always was around hockey. And when I went to Hamilton, as Jack mentioned, you know, my father died when I was a freshman in October. So I was around hockey tryouts, and I was really contemplating not playing lacrosse in the spring. But fortunately, Gene McCabe, who was my coach for 3 years at Hamilton, kind of took me under his wing and talked me into staying with the lacrosse program. I was fortunate to be on the team in the spring, because I didn't do that well academically as a freshman. Obviously, with my father passing, I kind of, you know, dropped the ball a little bit in the fall, and then in the spring I picked it up again. But Gene McCabe was really a big part of that. You know, and he pushed me in a lot of different ways to stick with the game. And then I had a lot of good friends on the team that I met in the fall that just kind of kept me going. And Hamilton was my safe space. And I was able to, you know, learn the game a lot more there. And then I just continued playing lacrosse and, you know, was fortunate enough to learn the game under some great assistant coaches and Gene McCabe. And then Scott Barnard came my senior year, and, you know, he and I have kept in touch, and he's one of my, you know, he's definitely a big mentor of mine as well. You know, just being able to learn from those great lacrosse minds. And obviously Coach McCabe is, you know, done great things at WNL. So, I've just been fortunate to, that lacrosse kept me focused. Because of the success there, I kind of stopped playing hockey at Hamilton after my sophomore season. And then I, you know, like I said, I just continued playing lacrosse. And then when I went to Australia is where I started coaching lacrosse officially, you know, professionally for the club team. You know, I played on the senior team and then I coached the junior team. So it was a lot of fun and I gained a lot of experience there. So kind of forayed me into my professional career.
Chris, you were a multi-sport athlete. You played two sports in college. When you're out recruiting and you see players that have played multi-sports in high school, does that create more interest in you as a recruiter? Like players that may play basketball and lacrosse and hockey and lacrosse?
Yeah, that's a great question. For us, specifically at RPI, and for me too, I love multi-sport athletes. You know, I played three sports in high school, two sports in college, and I think for us, it really excites us because we see a guy who hasn't played year-round lacrosse. And so when we get them at RPI, we say, okay, well, now you're able to play 12 months out of the year, basically, and become an expert. You know, obviously they have a great base, but we love multi-sport athletes. We really do. And we're fortunate enough that we get a lot of those multi-sport athletes. And they're not burned out. You know, they want to get better, which is great.
What is your offensive philosophy as a coach? And where does it start from? And how has it progressed to where you are now?
My philosophy is, you know, kind of creativity and free-flowing and let the boys play, so to speak. You know, I think when I was at Hamilton, I was struggling with the X's and O's. Coach McCabe drew up a lot of plays and I didn't necessarily thrive at that. And so for me, I always wanted to try to give my players the tools to, you know, the foundation and the tools to be able to be creative. So, you know, for us, we like to play the two-man game at RPI and we're, you know, kind of creative and don't necessarily like to create robots is what we call them. So I think a lot of the guys thrive under that because they can play free and not worry about making mistakes, because where you learn and get better is by making mistakes. And I think that's, you know, we've been able to develop some great relationships and trust with our players in that regard.
So your offense is set up on situational offense in terms of you teach the players, this is a situation. You might have a 2-on-1, 3-on-2, or this is a good opportunity if the ball's down low, goal line extended to run maybe a two-man game, get the ball down low, down to the GL, you know, goal line extended, attack man, set a pick, have him come around, maybe set a pick on the other side. So you want to be creative that way, like understanding where the slides are coming from, where the open guy is going to be, and then create those opportunities on their own. Is that what you're talking about when
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Thank you for articulating that a little bit better. I think that goes into our scouting too. You know, where's the defense coming from? How is, you know, are they sliding? Are they pre-rotating? Are they, you know, where are they feeling from? Are they feeling from the wing? Are they feeling from the backside? And what are the different scenarios that we can attack that defense specifically? So, yes.
In terms of your attackmen, what attributes, skill sets are you looking for your players to excel at RPI?
Yep. Great question. We really want guys that ride hard and are relentless on ground balls. Obviously we want guys that have good stick skills and guys that can score, but we really pride ourselves in being a really hard riding team and ground ball attacking team. So if you're not going full speed when you're riding or ground balls, you're probably not going to be on the field. And I don't think that that's rare at the college level, but I do think that a lot of players don't necessarily see the value in riding or ground balls at a younger age, just because there's a lot of emphasis put on, you know, goal scoring. And it's a team game, and that's why six players are on the field for offense at a time. But you need to have those gritty plays in order to set up those goals. So, yeah, I mean, those are the biggest attributes that we're looking for.
One thing I'll say about my nephew, Chris, is he's a workhorse. He's at all the tournaments, all the recruiting camps, and has a very good eye for, evaluating talent. But one of the things, Chris, that I wanted you to talk about to the listeners and the players out there, the coaches that are on the fields watching these players play in the summertime, not only are they watching the players play, but they're also watching them on the sideline and listening to what they're saying to their teammates, what they're saying to the opposite team, what they're saying to the officials. And that's very important. Expand on that for me, because you see and hear things that the players don't think those coaches or the coaches on the sideline are seeing or hearing, correct?
Yes, that's a great, great point. So, you know, Coach Daggs has taught me a lot of things, but one of the major things that he's taught me is, you know, sit close to the benches when you're recruiting. The other part is I love the showcases where I'm able to be a coach, where I'm able to interact with them on a different level. Because for me, I love relationship building. I think that's one of my biggest strengths is connecting with the players. But to your point, Uncle Jack, I'm listening all the time. I want to see if a player is a good teammate. I want to hear if he's talking back to his coach or if it's heat of the moment, or I want to hear if he's encouraging his teammates or if he's, you know, just in his own world. Is he complaining every time he comes off the field? Is he being positive when he's not playing well? For me, it's those intangibles that you can't get on the other side of this, on the other side of the sideline, on the other side of the field. And the other thing is, you know, body language is a huge part of it. You know, are you celebrating with your teammates when they score? Are you celebrating when your team picks up a ground ball? That kind of stuff. You know, for us and for me specifically too, you know, I think those are huge factors.
Yeah, it's actually the secret when I go to tournaments, and I don't have the same job as you anymore, but I used to, but yeah. I sit next to coaches who sit next to players to hear them talk about the players. Because I think that's the most interesting part to me is like, because I know that coaches see different things than I would, even though I'm a coach now. What to you is the first thing you look at?
Yeah, I mean, first, can you pass and catch? You know, are you, and then the second thing I watch for is honestly the hustle. You know, if you don't think you're going to get the ball, are you lollygagging or are you still going full speed all the time? You know, I won't mention names, Uncle Jack, but there's one guy on your club team that, you know, we've talked about numerous times that is just relentless effort all the time. And that's a guy that we try to recruit at every level, or every tournament, you know, guys that are always going full speed, all the time, no matter what, because it's not about the result. It's about the effort and it's about how you react to the result.
New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal will return after this message.
This fall, Quincy College in Quincy, Massachusetts drops the puck on its first ever hockey season in the City of Presidents, just 10 minutes from Boston. The Granite, as they're known, will play in the CHF Collegiate Hockey Federation against Babson, Mass Maritime, Nichols, Sacred Heart, and D3 programs at UNH and Farmingdale State in New York. The Quincy College Granite will be well coached. Kyle Robertson has been coaching regional junior teams for 20 years, and over 100 of his players have gone on to NCAA programs. Kyle's assistant is Matt Gibbons, who's been coaching at North Quincy High for 12 years and won 3 titles there. 3 years ago, he was the MIAA Coach of the Year. And as far as the educational part, Quincy College has a lot to offer. 37 different 2-year degrees, and it's super affordable. There's even a new 4-year business management degree that costs much less than other 4-year schools. Want to make some history in a first-year hockey program? Now's your chance. Get more info at quincycollege.edu/hockey. Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students could earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits, prep and high school, Division I, II, and III colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.
Do you recruit just offensive players, or do you recruit the other side of the ball as well?
I watch both. I watch all positions, goalie, defense, face-off and offense. And, you know, for the defense, it's, are you communicating? Are you fighting for ground balls? Are you, how do you look off ball? Are you lazy off ball? Are you ball watching? Are you constantly looking for, you know, to take the ball away, or are you playing sound defense as well? On the face-off, if you lose the face-off, are you battling, or are you just giving up and, you know, palms up? Or are you battling for ground balls? Are you trying to cause a turnover? Are you being a smart lacrosse player and trying to shut off the pole or communicating with your pole, putting him where you want him to be, et cetera? And for goalies, you know, quick outlets. I'm sure a lot of coaches are looking for that right now, and being able to make the right pass.
When you're watching these games at all these tournaments and watching the scrimmages, games at these recruiting showcases, how often do you know what the score is in that particular contest?
That is a great question.
I rarely do. Even when I'm coaching, I'm looking over. I have to constantly check the scoreboard. And it doesn't matter, honestly. You know, obviously we just want to see a close game where the ball is going up and, you know, back and forth, but it doesn't matter who wins. I think sometimes I'll glance at the score to see if it's a blowout, you know, and then I'll see, okay, are you going hard, or are you fooling around, or are you, you know, kind of being casual, or are you still going full speed? You know, that kind of thing.
Because we preach as coaches in this club world, it doesn't matter what the score is. The coaches do not know what the score is, and they don't care what the score is. So, like you said, it's not about the results. It's about your energy. It's about your effort. It's about your attitude. And it's about keeping your palms down. And it's not about blaming your teammate for not sliding. And it's never your fault if the other team scores. Or, I didn't score the goal. I need to score goals in order to get recruited. You need to ride. You need to pick up ground balls. You need to make the right passes. You know, you need to play the right team game. You need to encourage your teammates on the field when you're on the sideline. That's what these coaches are looking for. You know, not only a very good lacrosse player with all those attributes, but a very good teammate. It's not about him. It's not about him getting recruited, because those kids end up not getting recruited. And if they do, they don't last very long.
Correct. At the end of the day, we want them to last for 4 years at the school. In the lacrosse program, everything that you said, Jack, is exactly right. I mean, we want guys to hold themselves accountable, and how are they going to learn from their mistakes? You know, if it's never their fault, then it's probably never going to be their fault in college, which is not a good way to be. And the other thing is, yeah, it matters if you score, but I would rather, if you draw a double or a triple, move the ball to the right, you know, make the right read instead of trying to score that goal and put that on your highlight tape. At the end of the day, you making the right pass is also recruitable. And it's also, it actually even shows more IQ sometimes, because you're making a better play, or you're making, you know, the smarter play, so to speak.
And you'll take a player who gives you great effort and understands the game versus a player who's maybe more skilled and athletic, but maybe can be a little lazy at times because he thinks he's maybe a little bit better than the players on the field, and he doesn't understand the game as well as some of the players on the field.
That is 100% accurate, yes. Yep. I would rather coach effort than deal with, you know, someone that's not going full speed all the time, 100%.
So while we're talking about club lacrosse, because I got a little, I always have a bee in my bonnet about club lacrosse, a little bit.
Sure.
It's helping me this summer. Like, I've seen some good coaches, and I've seen some, you know, in the past, I just was like, all you're doing is screaming. I hate it. Please stop.
Yep.
When you watch club lacrosse versus when you see a full high school game, what tells you more about a player?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think there's definitely some coaches out there that don't quote unquote get it and that are in it for themselves and all about winning and aren't necessarily teaching the players the right, I don't want to say etiquette, but you know, the right way to play the game, so to speak. And I think for me, watching a high school game versus a club game, I think it's gotten a lot better to your point. But for high school, you know, it is a lot more team oriented. I think a lot of clubs have done a better job of being team oriented. And I think honestly, sometimes when I'm hearing coaches screaming at their players, I do want to just hear, I would rather them not yell so I can see if the player knows what he's doing. Because sometimes coaches are yelling what they should be doing all the time, and I can't evaluate if that player knows the game or if he's just listening to his coach. Now, obviously, there's something to be said about, you know, teaching. But I think if you're constantly yelling and worrying about those things, then it kind of detracts from the players.
Yeah, I think the coaching high school this year, the number one thing I just yelled was either stay back,
yeah,
pursuing on a break, or come off the field because we need to sub you off. That's it. And the teaching moments for me are always between the whistles. I don't think that if you're trying to teach a kid and he's on the field, you're trying to tell him exactly where to go. Like, you're just wasting your breath because, yeah, half the time the kid can't hear you. And the other half of the time he doesn't care. He's already going to do what he's going to do. Right.
No question about it. I mean, you got to let the kids play. You know, especially at the club level, I think maybe in high school there's maybe a little bit more control because they spend more time with the players and they maybe have a better understanding of the offense. But when you're telling a player to constantly, you know, go to X or get the ball to X and, you know, set a pick and, you know, go down the alley and this and that and the other thing, one, it's no fun for the player. And to Chris's point, he can't recruit that player because he doesn't know if that player understands what he's doing or does understand what he's doing. And my take on the high school player versus club, I truly believe that if you come from a good high school program, all right, and there's very good coaching, you tend to adjust better at the club level than you might if you come from a program that doesn't have a lot of success. Because what I find is players that don't have a lot of success, the jump from playing in a program with not a lot of success to club is a huge difference. And they have a very difficult time adjusting, and they don't understand why they're not dominating at that level like they did with their high school. And that's where you really find out who the kids are that want to get better and want to play hard and understand their strengths and their weaknesses. Because you can go through three guys at the high school level and you can't go through three guys at the club level, now you got to start thinking, okay, one, I'm not as good as I think I am. And two, maybe I should figure out where the slides are coming from and be unselfish and make that correct pass to the guy that's wide open on the crease.
Yeah, no, it's a great point that, you know, I think it's definitely a humbling experience for some guys if they do it the right way. You know, I think the other thing is when you're talking about club, it should really just be in conjunction with your high school program, right? Like, you obviously are going to get a lot of looks and a lot of recruiting events in the fall and summer. but it's in supplement of your high school program. You know, you're obviously spending more time, to your point, Jack, you're spending more time with the high school coaches, but you also have to learn how to adapt at the club level. So I think it definitely can show how a player has evolved or how they can see the game in a little bit differently. So I think that's a great point.
You've spent a lot of your coaching career at prep and high school level. What made you want to be a college coach?
Yeah, it's a great question. I have always kind of felt the calling of college coaching. I think for me, I never really fully embraced it when I was younger. I think I was trying to please people in my family to follow a different path career-wise. And I always, like, the happiest months of my year was when I was coaching. And I think for me, it was just about being true to myself and having an amazing supportive wife who actually pushed me into taking this job at RPI. You know, I applied for it and she was fully supportive. And I think those combined just kind of allowed me to kind of take the next step.
Well, it's been a nice progression for you, like many players, but yeah. I truly think you are the coach you are today because you coached at the youth level, you coached at the high school level, you coaching at the club level, right? You're a head high school coach, and you were an assistant coach. You coached overseas. Now you're an assistant college coach. So all those experiences, you had to teach a kid how to catch and throw as a youth coach, right? Now you're beyond that. Now you have a greater appreciation for the athletes that are coming on your campus now because they can catch and throw and they want to be there. They're committed. When you're at the high school level, they're not as committed. Maybe even at the club level. At the youth level, they're just starting to learn the game. So you're evolving like your players have evolved, and you end up at the same place, college. So you found a great home, and those experiences really benefited and got to where you are today.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point too. You know, I needed, my journey was this journey for a reason, you know, and it's, I'm very fortunate and I'm really happy that it's come to fruition. And I love my experience so far. And I think it's a great point, Jack, that it's kind of just progressed this way. And I feel very fortunate and I'm in the right place at the right time. So it's great.
Playing in Australia. Yeah. Tell me how that happened. I don't know if I've told this story. I was in line to do that. And then I had a call with my host.
Thank God you didn't.
I know. But listen, no, you'll love this story. So I was ready to go over to Australia. I was ready to, like, buy the ticket to go over there. And I called the host family, and they're like, who is this? I'm not going to do the Australian accent because it's very offensive.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, this is Kyle. They're like, oh, we thought you'd be a girl. And I'm like, what? And apparently in Australia, Kyle is a girl's name.
It is.
It's not a boy's
Why
name.
Why would you ever bring that up?
Yeah, it's just like, it's too funny. So they're like, you can come coach the girls team. I was like, I don't know anything about girls lacrosse. I don't think I could do that. And they're like, oh, no worries, mate. I don't think it's going to work out. And I'm like, okay. And then I had to, like, call my parents and be like, yeah, so that Australia thing, that's not going to work out because they thought I was a girl. So
that is unbelievable.
I want to get your take on Australia when you were there because it is clearly very different than here.
Yeah. I mean, that's an amazing story. It's so, like I said, I mean, I Jack got me hooked up with Glenelg, which is in South Australia. In Adelaide, I never went abroad in college because I was playing hockey and then lacrosse was in the spring. And you know, I always wanted to try something new and go live in a different country. And I was fortunate, like many things in my life, that I had a connection to Australia. So, you know, Jack hooked me up with one of his former teammates who was the coach at the time. And my mom said she would buy, you know, the plane ticket as a graduation gift. So I literally left I graduated from Hamilton on a Sunday and I flew out on like a Wednesday or a Thursday, and I was playing lacrosse, you know, the following Sunday in Australia. It was an amazing experience. I really want to go back. You know, I know Jack, you've gone once or twice since the '80s, but I lived with a host family, and then I lived with a couple of friends on the team a couple months into that. And I was working at a factory and then coaching. So it kind of all worked itself out, but I was very fortunate that I was able to work over there. You know, I think when Jack was over there, they paid you under the table, but they were very strict about that. When I was over there, they wanted me to get my visa and only do above the table work. So I was in a factory, and then I traveled to the Gold Coast and went scuba diving in the Great Barrier Reef. I mean, I went whitewater rafting through the rainforest up there. It was an amazing experience, and I've made a lot of lifelong friends that I you know, still for actually a few of my friends are still on the Australian national team, which is kind of crazy. And then a few guys that I coached were on the Australian national team. So it's kind of come full circle, lots of fun stories there.
Well, what's great about Australia lacrosse is the people that play it absolutely love it. Unfortunately, yes. It hasn't grown and hasn't developed since I've been there. It's pretty much the same. I mean, they've got, you know, a couple of good players from year to year, but they really haven't taken the leap that I thought they would take from 1986 till now, where Canada has taken a leap, and even Japan and England and some of the other international countries that are playing the game. And, you know, now that I got a big push in Italy and Europe, which is great for the game. And when I went to Australia, I got a call from somebody who was, I don't know, 2 o'clock in the morning. Hey, bloke, you know, mate, you want to come to Australia?
Australians sound a lot like Italians.
You know, you want to come to Australia? And I'm like, Australia? Where is Australia? Oh, it's on the other side of the country. So I said, hey, come and play lacrosse. I said, sure, I'll come. You know, I don't know where it is. So I left a week after I graduated. I had no idea where I was going, right?
You didn't know where Australia was?
No, I didn't. Well, we didn't. We didn't have like the internet.
Maps.
Yeah, we had maps, and then I you know. But I will say this: I thought I was going to the southern part of the country. South Australia is in the north of the equator, which I learned.
Right.
So it's not in the southern part. South Australia. I thought it was going to be warm the whole year, like going to South Florida, but it wasn't.
No. Oh no!
And so it was great. I learned a lot about the map and where Australia was, but they play international rules over there, and it's a very different game. And I will, last thing I'll say, my first game in Australia, they know you're the American, right? They're allowed to bring two Americans over per team. And first whistle blows, I got this big Australian defenseman. He's got a wooden shaft. Just before the whistle blows, whacks me across the arm and says, "Welcome to Australia, mate." I'm like, huh? Oh, my God. I'm in for a run here. But, yeah, great experience, great people. And, you know, now I know where Australia is.
An amazing story. Speaking of amazing stories, though, pretend Jack is not listening for a second. Tell me your best Uncle Jack story.
Oh, man. There's so many. So, I mean, I think... I think one of the best stories I had was, you know, Uncle Jack going to Lake Placid, and I was working there at the time, you know, and I think I was underage at the time. Well, I don't know if I could say this, but, you know, he was kind of took me under his wing, let me hang out with a lot of the former Blazers. You know, Coach Desko's brother was on Jackie's team, and you know, Steve Scher. I mean, there's so many that I'm probably leaving off, but, you know, Jack brought me out to the bars with them and kind of helped me meet some of the older guys. And, you know, I think that kind of solidified my love of lacrosse and being wanting to continue playing. And I wasn't too young. I think I was in college, but it was a great time for me to kind of, you know, spend some time with my cousins, you know, Brian and Johnny and Julianne, and also spend some time with Jack and his friends. So it was a lot of fun.
I'm looking forward to Placid this year. I'm going to go. I go every year, but I go incognito. I've never seen you there, ever.
Now the cat's out of the bag.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Find you.
We have a Piattelli alumni team participating in the Open Division. So
the Open Division?
Yes, we played in it last year and lost in the semis.
Wow.
In overtime.
It's so amazing.
We got a nice group.
Everybody go to Lake Placid if you can.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yep.
It's the most fun. Well, hey, Chris, thank you so much for coming on. It's always great to talk to someone that actually knows Jack too, but also, you know, you really are carving your own path. I know your head coach, he's an awesome dude. Such a great guy. Scott Hackett Daglish is awesome. A great coach. And, we really want to thank you for, coming on the podcast.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piattelli and our producer, Steve Safran, I'm Kyle Devitt. We will see you next time.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at NELaxJournal, Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, Lax Journal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.